The IBF have formally ordered a light heavyweight final eliminator between Joshua Buatsi and Jean Pascal. So if we have a look at the IBF rankings here at 175, obviously Artur Beterbiev is their champion, but the number one and number two positions are vacant in their top 15. Number three is Joshua Buatsi, so he is eligible to fight in this final eliminator against the next highest ranked available contender. So if we go down the list, the next individual there at number four is Anthony Yard. But Yard, of course, already has, apparently, a guaranteed shot at Beterbiev with a different sanctioning body, the WBO. So it wouldn't really make sense for him to fight in a final eliminator against anybody if he's already got a guaranteed shot next. So you go down from Yard, and the next individual is Zerto Ramirez. But Ramirez is in a similar position, this time with the WBA. He apparently has a guaranteed shot against Dmitry Bivol next. So again, no reason for him to compete in a final eliminator. And then the next person down the list at number six is Jean Pascal. So it's Buatsi versus Pascal in an IBF final eliminator, assuming that both these guys choose to go ahead with it. I can see why Pascal would definitely want to go ahead with it, but with Joshua Buatsi, he may choose to go in a different direction. The reason I say this is because Dmitry Bivol is a DAZN fighter. I know Oscar De La Hoya disputes this idea that Bivol is a Matchroom fighter, but he's certainly a DAZN fighter, and therefore a fight against Buatsi would be easier to make from a network standpoint. And perhaps Eddie Hearn, as Joshua Buatsi's promoter, feels as though Bivol might be a better style matchup for Buatsi at this stage. Bivol is a very good boxer, very fast and what have you, but he isn't the devastating puncher that Artur Beterbiev is. And if you've got a fighter who is maybe still slightly on the green side, even though he's in his late 20s, you might rather take a chance as a promoter against somebody who is a good boxer rather than somebody who's a devastating puncher. So we'll see which direction Matchroom and Buatsi choose to go. And of course, if Joshua Buatsi was to fight Bivol, and Bivol is still a Matchroom fighter, then it's a win-win for Eddie Hearn. No matter who wins the fight, Eddie Hearn wins. Anyway, let's look at the fighters here. So Joshua Buatsi is 16-0, 13 KOs, 29 years of age now. His last fight was that UD over Craig Richards. I personally thought it was very close and could have gone either way, to be honest with you. I know a lot of other people disagree, but I thought that was real close, and I wouldn't have grumbled at all if they'd given it to Craig Spider Richards. Prior to that, he fought Bolotniks, and well, I'm sure you guys have followed his career so far as closely as I have. And the opponent, if this IBF final eliminator goes ahead, is Jean Pascal, who I know you're all familiar with, a veteran light heavyweight. He's fought the likes of Carl Froch back in the days, Adrian Diakonu, of course. He fought Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins twice, Lucian Bute, Sergey Kovalev, Yuneski Gonzalez, Alida Alvarez, Dmitry Bivol, Marcus Brown, Badu Jack, and most recently, Fang Long Meng, which was, could you call it an upset? Meng was an undefeated fighter at the time, a Chinese fighter, and Pascal managed to turn him over. Pascal has scored quite a few upsets in his career. I didn't actually see the Fang Long Meng fight, I don't think, but Meng is a southpaw, and Pascal has had tremendous success against southpaws in his career. If you look at the Marcus Brown fight back in 2019, he managed to win that against a slick, fast, athletic southpaw. Go back even further to the Lucian Bute fight. Had tremendous success there against the southpaw. Chad Dawson, who was a very fast, athletic southpaw. And again, Jean Pascal had tremendous success, so he always seems to do well against southpaws. Having said that, he's also done well against several orthodox fighters. A couple fights back, he fought Badu Jack. But what I have to mention, of course, is the fact that he failed a PED test after the Badu Jack fight for multiple banned substances. So that kind of throws the Badu Jack win into question, because was he on something during that fight? And if so, how much did it enhance his performance? And without it, would he have even been able to win? These are the questions, the legitimate questions that we can ask. And perhaps even the Marcus Brown fight and several other fights could be called into question because we don't know whether he was clean for those fights. But anyway, he bounced back from the shame, if he feels any shame, of the failed PED test to beat Fan Longmeng earlier on this year and put himself in a position to potentially challenge for the IBF title. Now, Jean Pascal, being based in Canada all his career, has actually sparred a lot with Artur Beterbiev. Perhaps he'll fancy his chances against Beterbiev because of their sparring. Then again, perhaps not. Who knows how those sparring sessions actually went? And of course, they were a long, long time ago, I believe anyway. So even if Pascal did fairly well, and I'm not saying he did, but let's just for a second, you know, do a hypothetical. Let's say he did fairly well in sparring against Beterbiev 3, 4, 5 years ago. Very different situation now, isn't it? Where Beterbiev has improved and come on, and Pascal, even though he's still hanging in around in and around the light heavyweight top 5, top 10, he's not the fighter he used to be. So, you know, things have changed. Although, saying that, Artur Beterbiev is no spring chicken. Now, as far as a fight against Joshua Buatsi, I think it's a good one for Buatsi because I don't think he's quite ready for a Dmitry Bivol now or an Artur Beterbiev. And fighting someone like a Jean Pascal, who's a tried and tested veteran of the game, former champion, very tough, very tricky, and awkward fighter, I think that would be great experience for Joshua Buatsi, and it would help prepare him for the next level, which is, of course, the elite level, the championship level. If he's able to get past a Jean Pascal and do so convincingly, I think it will stand him in good stead. Now, obviously, it's a risk because Pascal is still turning over people, right? He turned over Marcus Brown, who was previously undefeated. He turned over Fan Longmeng in his last fight. He was previously undefeated. So, yes, it's a risk, but I think it's a worthwhile risk for Joshua Buatsi at this stage. But will Eddie Hearn feel the same? Because at the end of the day, this is not an Eddie Hearn fighter. It's not a Matchroom fighter. Jean Pascal, again, as far as I'm aware, is not a DAZN fighter. So do you really want to take a risk against somebody who you have no control over if he beats your guy? These are the questions I'm sure Eddie Hearn is asking himself. Eddie Hearn may prefer to just go straight into the Dmitry Bivol fight. But again, Dmitry Bivol potentially has to fight Zerto Ramirez next. If what Oscar De La Hoya is saying is true and he's negotiating right now with Ramirez's people, Dmitry Bivol's people, if he's really negotiating with Bivol's manager, then, you know, Eddie Hearn's going to have to find a different route for Joshua Buatsi, and maybe that will be the Jean Pascal fight. Now, one thing I have to point out is that Joshua Buatsi, if he goes through with the final eliminator against Pascal, he's not obligated to take, let's say he beats Pascal, he's not obligated to take the IBF route and fight Artur Beterbiev. Although it would look a little strange if you've got a guaranteed shot against Beterbiev, and then instead of taking that, you go and fight, let's say, the winner of Bivol Ramirez in a voluntary situation. Again, it looks a little odd because generally, as a mandatory challenger, you'll get a more generous split than you would as a voluntary challenger to one of these champions. So, but just looking at the WBA rankings, Buatsi is highly ranked with the WBA at number 2. So if Zerto Ramirez fights Bivol, Buatsi might be next in line anyway, although he may have to fight a final eliminator for that belt, potentially against Callum Smith. Maybe that's the route that Eddie Hearn would prefer to go down, because of course Callum Smith is another Eddie Hearn fighter. So anyway, let me know what you guys think in the comments below about the IBF ordering Joshua Buatsi against Jean Pascal for an IBF final eliminator. Do you think this is a good route for Joshua Buatsi to go down? Or do you think he's better off going down the WBA route and getting a shot at Bivol? Do you think that stylistically Bivol is a bit better for Buatsi? Or maybe you feel like the Beterbiev fight is better for Boatse. Let me know what you guys think in the comments section. What you're looking at here is the top 15 heavyweight rankings with all four sanctioning bodies, the WBO, IBF, WBC, and WBA. And what jumps out to me here about these rankings is the fact that despite back-to-back KO losses and a long time out of the ring, Deontay Wilder is still ranked at number one by the WBC. And he's been there for quite some time now. Remember, in the run-up to the Dillian Whyte-Tyson Fury fight, White was actually not the number one at the time. He was the interim champion. So the number one spot was occupied by Deontay Wilder. Okay, despite the back-to-back knockout defeats. Now, contrast that with Anthony Joshua. Joshua, in his last fight, lost to Usyk, but the fight before that, he was unified champion, right? And well, going into the Usyk fight, he was still unified champion. And he had three belts as opposed to one belt with Deontay Wilder. He lost on points as opposed to being stopped twice in a row. And Anthony Joshua has beaten much better opponents than Deontay Wilder has beaten in his career. But AJ has been dropped right down in the rankings. So he got dropped down to number four with the WBO from being champion. Number four with the IBF. And I'll come back onto this in just a second. With the WBC, he's not ranked at all. Now, he's never held the WBC title, but still, should it really come down to how much money you've paid a sanctioning body to be able to get ranked? Aren't the rankings supposed to be a reflection of what the fighters have actually achieved in the ring? You know? Then, and I'm talking from an idealistic standpoint here, of course. I'm not acting like this is realistic. Then we look at the WBA, who Anthony Joshua was champion for, and he's dropped down to number five with them. So none of the sanctioning bodies are as generous to Anthony Joshua as the WBC are with Deontay Wilder. Just one loss removed from being unified champion, and he's been dropped down this low with all three sanctioning bodies that he was previously champion with. Now, if you look at the people that have ranked above him, with the WBO, they've got Joe Joyce, Joe Parker, and Frank Sanchez above AJ. I think that that is bizarre. You know, I don't think that either any of these three guys realistically should be above AJ yet. The IBF, even more bizarre. You've got the likes of Luis Ortiz and Filip Hrgović ranked above AJ. How is that possible? Luis Ortiz, what has he done recently? Then, you know, that Anthony Joshua hasn't done. He beat a guy in his last fight and he was dropped several times, who AJ beat about 5 years ago. Filip Hrgović, as good as he might turn out to be, who has he beaten lately to be ranked above Anthony Joshua? Again, absolutely bizarre. And I'm sure, you know, it's really all about lobbying the sanctioning body and it's about politics behind the scenes. But in terms of justifying it to the public, I don't see how they can justify this. Then we look at the WBC. AJ's not present there at all. Again, that's just bizarre to me. Martin Bacoli's there. Michael Hunter's there. Ajit Kabayel has made the WBC top 15, but Anthony Joshua has not. Is this the Al Haymon influence, making sure that AJ doesn't get anywhere near the top of the WBC rankings? You guys let me know what you think in the comments. Then we look at the WBA. And above Anthony Joshua is Huey Fury. Remember, AJ was just WBA heavyweight champion two fights ago. And somehow they've seen fit to put Huey Fury, Robert Hellenius, Michael Hunter, and Daniel Dubois above him. Now, Daniel Dubois, of course, is also the regular WBA. So we might be able to discount that ranking. But Michael Hunter, Hellenius, Huey Fury, do they deserve to be above AJ at this stage? And any of you who are perhaps new to my channel, understand that this is not an AJ fanboy channel. That's not what I do here. I've criticized Anthony Joshua a lot over the years, just as I've criticized every other heavyweight and every other fighter. What I do here is objective analysis of fights and situations. It's all about being objective. It's not about fanboying for one guy, never criticizing him, or hating on one guy and never praising him. My motto in this channel has always been, no fighter is below praise and no fighter is above criticism. Okay? With that being said, these rankings, I don't think can be justified in my view. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below, particularly the WBC, who have Deontay Wilder still at number one, despite back-to-back knockout defeats against Tyson Fury in a long time out the ring. And there doesn't seem to be any news on when Deontay Wilder will return to the ring, with the WBC still having ranked at number one. I mean, they held Deontay Wilder's hand through the entirety of his title run. They allowed him to get away with not fighting more dangerous mandatories and so on. They gave him knockover job mandatories like Berman Stiverne the second time. How on earth did Stiverne become mandatory when he hadn't fought in about 2 years? And he'd had one fight in about 2 years since the first Wilder fight. And that was against a journeyman in, was it Derek Rossi that he fought, the journeyman? How on earth can they justify making Stiverne mandatory in that situation? I don't know, but they did. And they gave him Wilder as a knockover job. And by the way, he got dropped in that Derek Rossi fight. Stiverne, that is. So yeah, let me know what you guys think about this in the comments below. I know other people have brought up the WBC with regards to other weight divisions and some strange things they're doing there as well. Look, none of the sanctioning bodies are squeaky clean. Far from it. They've all done some very questionable things, and I'm sure they will continue to do questionable things. But in this particular instance, it's the WBC that we're focusing on. So anyway, let me know what you guys think in the comments. Okay, so the rumor is that Sky are not willing to pay the Saudis the amount of money that they want to secure the British rights for this Alexander Usyk Anthony Joshua rematch. Now, we'd heard previous rumors that they had already secured the rights. So were those rumors wrong? Did the Saudis or Sky try to renegotiate after already agreeing in principle to the deal? We can only speculate. But people are saying that it's possible here that the Usyk Joshua rematch won't actually be broadcast in the UK if the Saudis can't find a UK broadcast deal that they're happy with. And again, there are rumors that the Saudis are very unhappy with Eddie Hearn because he hasn't been able to deliver whatever he said he could deliver or promise or whatever the case may be with regards to a broadcast partner. Who knows what's going on? Now, as it stands right now, there doesn't seem to be any news about the fight itself being in jeopardy, although you have to imagine that there's the possibility it could be, because the UK, you would think, is the main market for this fight in terms of pay-per-view sales and what have you. So, well, of course, there's going to be money coming in from Eastern Europe and other parts of the world as well, but you would imagine that the UK would be the main market, and that's where the Saudis would generate the most revenue from. So if they don't have that, if there isn't a UK broadcast deal, might they just decide to pull out altogether and the fight not happen? We'll have to wait and see. Let me know what you guys think in the comments below. Some people have suggested that it could be a deliberate sabotage move by Sky. Obviously, we know that business, and certainly the business of boxing, is very dirty. But how far would these promoters and networks go to try and get one over on their competition? Would they go as far as doing something like this and pretending as though they're going to, you know, make a bid for a particular fight, put a certain amount of money up, and then pull out just to mess Eddie Hearn around, just to maybe hurt his reputation? Would they go as far as doing that? Because you'd imagine that that would also hurt Sky's reputation. That would also hurt their working relationship with the Saudis, and they might want to do big fights with them in the future. So I'm not saying that it's likely. I'm just relaying what some boxing fans have said online regarding this, because we know that there is a strong competition at the moment between Matchroom and Sky, well, DAZN and Sky, BT, etc. in the UK. So who knows what the situation is. more than likely, I would have thought, it isn't any kind of skullduggery on Sky's behalf. It's just a situation where, I don't know, wires got crossed in the negotiation process and somebody thought they were going to get more money than they really were. Or maybe it's a situation where Sky were willing to bid a certain amount for the fight, but in terms of the return that they're expecting, it's lower than the Saudis are happy with by way of, you know, pay-per-view sales and whatnot. So whatever the case may be, watch this space. If there's any more rumors or any concrete news on this situation, then obviously I'll do a video about it as and when. But until then, let me know what you guys think in the comments below. And again, if you've got any more information on this developing story, then let me know in the comments section below. I'm out.